Welcome to Gemara Markings. Shiur is Yevomos Daf Kuf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's Shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur at the beginning of the new Perek, Perek Ho'isha Basra, the 16th Perek of Maseches Yevomos. The Mishnah, as you can see, begins at the top of the daf. On the side of our daf, we have the nosei, the topic heading, where we've written, Ma dino shel isha, what is the law regarding a woman, shaholcha baila v'tzarosa liyaseyam, where a woman's husband and co-wife went abroad, v'heidu shemeis baila, and testimony was stated regarding the death of her husband. The Mishnah. Ho'isha shaholach baila v'tzarosa liyaseyam. The subject of our Mishnah is the woman who remains behind. So her husband and the co-wife went abroad, ubo v'omru lo, and they came and told her, meis ba'alech, your husband died. Lo tinosei v'lo tisyabem, she should not marry out, that marry some outsider, nor should she do yibum, marry the husband's surviving brother, ad sheteida shema mu'uberes hitzorosa, until it becomes known whether the co-wife was pregnant. Of course, if the co-wife was pregnant and bears a child, so there's no mitzvah of yibum, because you're dealing with a man who died leaving a child. Hoisa lo chamois. The woman who remained behind happened to have a mother-in-law abroad. Now, a mother-in-law, that means it's her husband's mother. If she gives birth, if she has a child, that's her husband's brother. So if a woman that we described above happens to have a mother-in-law abroad, eino chosheshes, she doesn't have to consider that which we mentioned just a moment before, that the woman gave birth, and the birth was to a boy. Now, why do we not have to concern ourselves with that? Well, because the mother-in-law bearing a child that will mechayev, that will bind this woman to Yibum, is of a minority possibility. Namely, a woman who gives birth, there's a chance that it's a male, chance that it's a female. If it's a female, so in this case a mother-in-law's bearing a female is not going to result in a mitzvah yibum. Only if she bears a male. But amongst all births, there are some miscarriages. So if you take the live births of females plus the miscarriages, take that all into consideration, you will find that the male births are a minority chance. If the mother-in-law is yotzisa malea, if she left while pregnant, in contrast to the case just before where we didn't know whether or not the mother-in-law was pregnant, it was a chashash that maybe she was pregnant. Here we know she was pregnant, and she left our vicinity in that state. Then, chosheshes, then maybe she will give birth to a male. Rabbi Yeshua Oimer Eino Chosheshes. Rabbi Yeshua, even in this case, is not chosheshes, does not concern himself with that possibility. Now, just to go over some of these points through the Rashi, we look at Rashi toward the top of the page. Hoy solo chamois, four lines from the top. A woman had a mother-in-law abroad. Ukshiyotza lo hayolo ben. When the mother-in-law left our vicinity, she did not have a son. V'ein yavam lazu. And as a result, the husband of our subject doesn't have his not having a brother doesn't leave the wife with a yavam to concern herself with. A yavam being the brother of one's husband. So eino choshesh, she does not have to concern herself or figure shema nitan lo yavam. Maybe a yavam was born. Afagav the chayshinu le'el shema yolda tsara. Even though at the beginning of the Mishnah we saw that the woman who remained behind had to concern herself, maybe the co-wife gave birth. So what about this co-wife versus mother-in-law, and how much do we have to be choshesh? In the case of the co-wife, it's different. Hasam hu, in that case, the choma de yolda tzora bein zachar bein nekeva mapik lo laha miyavam. A co-wife giving birth, that means she's providing a child to the husband. Upon his death, whether the child that was provided was a male or female, that will exempt from yibum. You're dealing with a man that dies leaving a child, whether it's male or female. There's no more yibum need that needs to be done. So there, we've increased the chances of a yibum exemption by saying that all live births will result in an exemption from yibum. Avol chamois. But in the case of a mother-in-law that we didn't see pregnant, dinami yolda, even if the mother-in-law gives birth, lo sokik lo lahach elun ken yolda zachar, it doesn't bind the woman that remained behind, we'll say the daughter-in-law, doesn't bind her to yibum unless that mother-in-law gives birth to a male child. The kulehai lo chayshinon shema yolda v'zachar haya, where that far we don't have to go, that maybe she gave birth, and that even if she gave birth, that it happened to be a male child. We saw, though, that the picture changed according to the Tanai Kama. If the mother-in-law left our vicinity pregnant, then we're only concerning ourselves with maybe it was a male. Rabbi Yeshua, though, even then says he's not choshesh, because fine, I saw the mother-in-law pregnant. Maybe it's a miscarriage. And even if it's not a miscarriage, maybe it's a female birth, which also would not result in any yibum obligation on the part of the woman that remained behind. The Gemara. Mai hi tsarasa. If you see, we have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You just go up two lines, you see the parallel arrow. The Mishnah used the expression that a woman, a wife, whose husband and co-wife went abroad, she's not allowed to yibum until she finds out whether the tsaros, so the co-wife, was pregnant. The Mishnah used the expression he tsarasa, that he, not just saying shemo muberes tsarasa, but shemo muberes he tsarasa. My heat sorasa, what's that added word telling us, instructing us? Ha komash malon. The following is what we have to learn from that. Laha tsora hu dechayshinon. For the tsora that we knew about, that's the one we have to worry about. However, avalitsora achriti, but to suspect that the husband went abroad, married another woman, lo chayshino, that far we don't have to go. So if witnesses came telling us that the co-wife was not pregnant, then the woman who remained behind does not have to consider any restriction, and she would be allowed to do yibum. Any restriction, meaning yibum-wise, and therefore, being that her husband and she had no children, being that there's witnesses that the co-wife was not pregnant, being that we don't have to consider maybe the husband married another woman abroad, So the woman that remained behind can now go ahead and do Yibum. The Mishnah told us that in the meantime, the woman who remained behind that was told that her husband died. The Mishnah said, Lo tino se, the lotus yabeng, two things. She shouldn't marry out, nor should she marry the surviving brother-in-law in mitzvah Yibum. On the side of the Gemara, we have a note, the Nose Mivneh note, and we also indicate that this structure will continue till Omid Beis. So it's a rather lengthy structure to take note of. We have two types of triangles that you see. HaGemara Bishnei Shlavim. The Gemara will appear in two stages. Number one, Kedei Lahasbir HaMishnah Delotinose Velotis Yabem HaGemara She'eles. In order to explain this expression, she shall not marry out, nor shall she do Yibum, the Gemara will ask, Lemo Masnisin Rebbe Meir He. Should we say that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe Meir? And that's the direction taken when you see a Gemara, when you see a triangle facing upwards. The inverted triangle represents Dechios Fekushos, rejections of that suggestion and questions that are raised. Then stage two, Achresha Gemara Meres, Machvarto Masnisin Rebbe Meir He, that it appears most likely then that our Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe Meir. HaGemara Boichenes Chuvazu. The Gemara will be taking a critical look at that answer. The triangle that you see the tips colored in are as such. The tip facing up represents Kushios, and the inverted type triangle there are Chuvas or responses. So now the Gemara. Bishlamo Yibumi Lo. That I can understand, that the woman who remained behind, who simply heard that her husband died, but we know that there was a co-wife. So I understand she shouldn't do Yibum. The Dilma, Mi'abra, the co-wife might be pregnant. The Kopoga, Bieshis Ach Do Raisa. And by marrying a brother-in-law, by doing Yibum, this woman that remained behind would be violating a Torah-level prohibition of marrying her husband's brother. In other words, the man would be violating, by taking her, his brother's wife. A man is not allowed to marry a brother's wife in the event that the brother had children. So we don't want the woman, the wife that remained behind, doing Yibum. Ella, lo tinosei, amai. The Mishnah also says that the woman that remained behind, before she gains any knowledge about the status of her sister-in-law, she shall not marry lashuk. The woman who remained behind cannot marry out. Why not? Amai, why not? Halochacha rov noshim, for rov noshim misabros viodos. Why not follow the majority of women, and the majority of women become pregnant and give birth? So now our Mishnah nevertheless does not allow her to marry out. Leimo Rebbe Meir he dechayesh lemi uta. Should we say that our Mishnah, in its restrictive approach, is of the opinion of Rebbe Meir, that factors in, that takes into consideration the minority of cases? And in this case, the minority of cases states that the co-wife did not become pregnant and give birth, and therefore the woman who remained behind is a candidate for Yibum, and she cannot therefore marry out. So is our Mishnah then only according to Rebbe Meir? The Gemara responds and says, not so. Afilu temo rabbonon ki azli rabbonon bosa ruba. When is it that the Rabbonon rule according to the majority case, the majority of cases, the majority situations? Ruba d'isei kamon. That's when you're dealing with a majority that is in front of us, a present majority. Kagon. Teisha chanuyos, the Sanhedrin. Well, first start with the case of Sanhedrin, a court ruling. And a court, Rashi's example, if you have a court of 23, which is considered a minor Sanhedrin, and 12 rule innocent and 11 rule guilty, so we follow the majority, the 12 who said innocent. And that's called a ruba de ise kamon. That's a rove. They are in front of us. The 23 judges that constitute a Sanhedrin, they are presently in front of us. And in cases like that, we follow the majority. The case of Teisha Chanuyos involves a number of shops where there are, let's say you have a row of 10 stores, and 9 of them are selling kosher meat and one is selling unkosher meat. You find a piece of meat outside the row of stores. So if you find a piece of meat outside the row of stores, we say, look, the majority of stores were selling kosher meat, so you can take that meat and eat it. But again, the case of the stores, the 9 kosher stores, they're all in front of you. Aval ruba de lesse kamon, but when you're dealing with a rove that is not in front of us, it's a world, it's a majority that exists in the world of women, as is the case over here, the world of women will become pregnant and give birth. So that when you have a rove, the less they come on, that's not in our presence, lo asli rabbonon bosor ruba. The rove is not going to be, the rove means the majority is not going to be a deciding factor. And therefore, the Rabbonon as well are not going to be influenced by that majority phenomenon. And therefore, in our Mishnah's restriction of her marrying Lashuk is not a reflection of Rabbi Meir alone. The Gemara asks, now notice this is a long question, you just told us in the most recent answer that the Rabbonon do not follow a rove when it's a Ruba de Lesa Kamon. Vehare kotonuktana, the Ruba de Lesa Kamon hi, the issue of a male or female minor, which will be explained very shortly in the Gemara, but the issue concerning them will be an issue of the world of minors. It's a rove de Lesa Kamon. They're not in front of us. The Asli Rabbonon Basa Ruba and the Rabbonon do follow the majority. Disanya Koton Uktano Lo Cholzin Velo Miyabmin Divrei Rebbe Meir. A minor male or female do not participate in the mitzvahs of Yibum. They don't do Chalitza, nor do they do Yibum. This is Rebbe Meir's opinion. Omru lo, the Rebbe Meir. Yofel mar tushen cholzim. Granted, that which you say of the minors not engaged in, they don't engage in chalitza, ish ksiv b'parsha, the posuk that deals with Yibum mentions the word ish. The posuk that deals primarily with chalitza mentions ish, which indicates an adult, umakshinon, and we compare isha leish. The female also must be an adult. So the word ish, which is stated in the context of chalitza, precludes or say excludes a minor, whether it be male or female. Elomatam ein miyabin, why is it that a female or male minor do not do yibum? Omar lohem. So Rabbi Meir answers, Koton, the minor, Shemo Yimsa Soros, he might develop into a Soros. Right now he's a minor, so we can't tell for sure how he will mature, but there are those, a minority, and that needs to be emphasized, a minority of males that don't mature normally, and they become what's called a Soros, a person who is incapable of procreation. Tana, the exclusion of a Tana, Shemotimsa Island, is also the female equivalent of a woman that is incapable of procreation. And the mitzvah of Yibum is predicated on procreation, that the surviving brother will marry the widow and and bring forth a child that will be the extension, the maintenance of the name of the deceased. And if the Katan and Katana turn out to be either a Soros or an Islandess, so then they are irrelevant to the mitzvah of Yibum. So if they're irrelevant to the mitzvah of Yibum, v'nimtzu poigin be'erva, and that leaves it as simply a brother-in-law, sister-in-law relationship, which is basically forbidden. If it's outside the context of procreation, it's a forbidden relationship. That's called erva. So, what do we see? We see, in contrast to Rabbi Meir, you see the Rabbanan that aren't concerning themselves with this. The Rabbanan Savri, Zil Bosaruba Diktanim, follow the majority of minors, Verov Ktanim Lavsri Sininhu. The Rabbanan who argue with Rabbi Meir will tell you that the majority of minors do not turn into Srisim, they mature into normal male adults. Zil, Bosar, Rov, Ktanos follow the majority of minor females, Veroiv, Ktanos, Lav, Ilanisinu, and as they mature, they don't turn into Ilanios. So the Rabbanan will follow the majority under all circumstances, whether it's Aruba, the Issei come on, or even Aruba the Lessei come on. The majority of children are not in front of us, they're the majority of the world's children. They mature into healthy adults. So the Rabbanan follow the Rove. So this brings us back to our original question. Why is it that the woman who remained behind cannot marry out? The chances are that the sister-in-law that had gone abroad became pregnant and bore a child, which would release the woman who stayed behind from mitzvah yibum. So why not marry out? Ella, machvarto masnisin Rabbi Meir he. So we have to come back to the original suggestion that our Mishnah, in fact, is Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir is the one that takes into consideration the minority of chances. And in our case specifically, there is a minority possibility that the co-wife did not become pregnant and bear a child. And as a result, the woman that remained behind is bound to the Yavam, and therefore she cannot marry Lashuk. She cannot marry someone else. B'mai Ukimta. So how have we set up our Mishnah? Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, who is Choshesh Lemiut. Note that we're at the beginning of a long question. Okay, so it's Rabbi Meir. Amos Seifa. State the continuation. Hoysa lo chamois. Eino Chosheshes. We saw this in our Mishnah, that if there was a mother-in-law who was abroad, so the wife who stayed behind doesn't have to consider that the mother-in-law bore a brother, a child, a son to the mother-in-law, that is, and would be her the woman's husband's brother. Well, Amai, if our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir, why do you say that you don't have to concern yourself with the mother-in-law? Halocha haroiv noshim, v'roiv noshim misabros v'yoldos. Follow the majority of women, and they become pregnant and bear children, miut mapilos, a minority miscarry, v'chol hayoldos, of all those that give birth, mechsu zechorem u'mechsu nekevis, part are, the half are male and half are female, smoch miuta de mapilos, l'mechsu de nekevos, attach the minority of miscarriages to the 50% of live births, v'havulhu zechorem miuta, the male births represent, male live births represent a minority, but Valechush, you should, since our Mishnah is being set up as Rabbi Meir, you should consider the minority chance, and therefore maybe the mother-in-law did give birth to a male child, which would be a brother of the woman's husband, the woman who stayed behind. Her husband now has a brother. So, why does our Mishnah say that if the only area of doubt was the mother-in-law, that's not the reason for any concern? The Gemara responds, Dilma kevon de ichsika l'shuk lo chayish. Since we're dealing with a woman whose husband did not have a known brother, and as such, with the death of her husband, leaving no brothers, no known brothers, so this woman is available to marry. She is free to marry Lashuk. So she had a Shuk status. And because of that, we're not Choshesh. The Gemara asks, oh, you're going according to the known status? Reisha Tichsik Liivum Tiabeim. In the Reisha, where there was a brother, and we have a woman who doesn't have children, and the Tzora, we don't know her to have had children. So you have a woman where there was a chazoka status of her being eligible for Yibum. Why doesn't she do Yibum in the Reisha? The Reisha said, Lo tino se velotis yabeim. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Baravua. Reisha the Isur Koreis Choshishu. In the case of the Reisha, where the question was, should she do Yibum based on that chazoka? Well, what does Yibum mean? It means that the woman who stayed behind is going to marry her husband's brother. If there is a mitzvah, that's great. But if it's not b'mokoi mitzvah, if that co-wife actually became pregnant and has a child, so the Yibum that the Reisha represents, because it's a case where there's a brother, that would be an Iser Kores if in fact that Sora had a child. Kores is it's a very severe punishment, and it represents we're dealing with a very severe offense. So in the Reisha, we'll say this preemptive measure of Choshishin, and we don't allow her to do Yibum. Seifa, however, where it's a question of the mother-in-law, and there's no known brother, what's the problem here that the woman wants to marry Lashuk? The Isor Lav, where if there would be a brother and she would not be marrying him, she wouldn't be doing Yibum, but rather marries Lashuk, that would be a negative violation. Low Choshishu, it's a lower level offense. And therefore, we don't impose any restriction, and therefore the Mishnah says, Lo Choshishu. If you have a woman whose husband had no known brothers, and the only possibility is that the mother-in-law that's not in front of us anymore, maybe she bore a son, that's the worst case scenario is that you have the woman that remained behind would be marrying Lashuk when there is a son to the mother-in-law. That's a lav, Yavoma Lashuk. So they didn't worry about that. Omar Rava, Michti. Rava has a question, and he says, let's look into this. Ha de Raisa, the Ha de Oraisa. Both concerns are concerns that maybe there is a Torah-level violation. Mali Isur Kores, Mali Isur Lav. What difference does it make whether it's an Isur Kores, as the Reisha represents, and we saw, in fact, restriction, and the Seifa, where there's also an Isur Doraisa of Yavama Lashuk, a woman who's bound to a Yavam that marries someone from the public, is violating an Isur Doraisa. So they're both Isur Doraisa, and we have a principle, and when you have a Suffolk concerning an Isur Doraisa, we are to take a restrictive approach. Therefore, we have to go back to try to understand why in the Reisha do we say, are we chayshinon, are we concerned? And in the Seifa, we're not choshesh. Seifa being the case of the mother-in-law. Ela Omar Rava. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Reisha chazoka leibum. In the Reisha, where the sister-in-law had gone abroad, there was a chazaka, there was a status of the woman who remained behind to do Yibum, because at this point that husband had no known children. So there's a status of Yibum, veruba. However, there's a rove, we'll say, of a competing nature, that the majority of women become pregnant and give birth. So that sister-in-law is very likely to have, we'll say, neutralized the mitzvah of Yibum. So on the one hand, the chazaka is in the direction of Yibum. The roiv, that the majority of women, in this case the co-wife being part of that majority, gets pregnant and gives birth. So the roiv is against Yibum. The chazaka loy odiv kiruba, the strength in halachic terms of a chazaka, chazaka means go according to a known status in order to determine matters, that method of resolving doubt is not as strong, lo odif, it's not as strong ki ruba as following a majority. So just to review that point, the chazaka, meaning in the direction of Yibum, is not as strong as the rov, which points in the direction of marrying Lashuk. However, the icy miuta de mapilois, now consider the minority of women who become pregnant that miscarry. Now, the miscarriage represents a case where the co-wife, if she gave birth, but it's a type of birth that's, it's called stillborn, and it wouldn't exempt from Yibum. So you take that mute of Mapilos, Samoich Lechazoka, attach it to the Chazoka, and we say attach it, we're dealing with abstract concepts right now, but we're dealing with halachic tools in order to determine doubts. So you take the minority of Mapilos, attach it to the Chazoka, which was in the direction of Yibum, just like the Hapola, a miscarriage, is in the direction of Yibum, Vahavile, Palgu, Palga. And now you have created a situation of 50% in the direction of Yibum and 50% in the direction of marrying Lashuk. Lo tinosei velo tisyabein. The result of creating a 50-50 situation is that she can't marry out and she will not do Yibum. Seifa, where there was a mother-in-law and the husband had no known brothers, and the husband is reported dead, the chazaka is Lashuk. The chazaka, the status of this woman that remained behind, is one of being able to marry out. Her husband has no brother, has no known brother. The ruba, the majority possibility, is Lashuk. What's the ruba over here? The issue of the mother-in-law conceiving and giving birth. The rove of her births are in the direction of non-Yibum. Remember, there's the females she might bear. There are the miscarriages. Vavilei zechorim miuta de miuta. The zechorim become a minority of a minority. Look at all of the factors here. You've got a chazaka pointing Lashuk. You've got the rove pointing Lashuk. So with these in mind, the Zechorim become a minority of a minority. Umiuto demiuto lochayesh Rabbi Meir. Even Rabbi Meir, who is choshesh for minority, for the mute, not when it's such a minor type mute, as is the case over here. And just to repeat that last point, the mute that would restrict the wife that stayed behind from marrying out is so insignificant, Rabbi Meir would not take that into consideration. And therefore, we saw in the case of the Chamos, we said, Lo Choshishin, and the woman who remained behind would be able to marry Lashuk. Loi Tinosei Veloi Tisyabeim. The Mishnah described the woman whose husband and co-wife had gone abroad, so she, the woman who remained behind, shall not marry out, and she should not do Yibum. The Gemara asks, Uli Oilam, shall this remain forever? Why doesn't she just do Chalitza, Mimonafshach, and then marry Lashuk? Brother of her husband could do chalitza with her, and that will free her from any yibum connection, and thereby be able to marry beheter, someone else. So the Gemara explains, and maybe before we go on, let us first take a look on the side of the Gemara. We have our Nosei Mivne heading. A triangle appears. The triangles represent Shnei Deos, two opinions, Be'inyan, Kamazman Hamtona, how much waiting time Nidrash is required, Kedei Lahatir Ho'isha Shenishara Kan, to enable her to become Muteres. This woman who remained here, Achrei Shabailu Vitzorasa Nosim Diasayam, the Loyodu Matza Vatzora, after her husband and the co-wife had gone abroad, and we don't know the co-wife situation, Lachlots Veloses Lashuk. How much time does she have to wait in order to do Chalitza and then marry out? So the Gemara explains, we said that we have two approaches, Omar Ziri, Le'atzma Shloisha Chadoshim. Laksma means because of herself, she has to wait 3 months as any woman who was married must wait in order to determine if she is pregnant or not. We have to determine who the father is of this, of a child. So she has to wait 3 months because of her own herself being the cause of waiting, her own possible pregnancy. The chaverta is her co-wife, her, literally her friend, but means her co-wife. She has to wait She has to wait 9 months. V'choyletzis mimonav shoch, and then after that period, she'll then be able to do chalitza. So the 3 months that she waits for herself will overlap with the 9 months of the co-wife, so that at the end of 9 months, she'll be able to do chalitza. Now, you'll ask, why is that necessary? So, as far as the co-wife is concerned, if she, in fact, became pregnant and bore a child, so the exemption from Yibum would be a result of that child. And a child exempts only through its emergence from birth. In other words, it emerges what we call avir olam. It leaves the woman's womb and is born. So that in order for to cover ourselves, to make sure that the pregnancy which was results in a child is going to be an effective means of releasing this woman, the wife who stayed behind, from Yibum, the co-wife would have to have given birth, and only then is the wife freed. Now, after that, after we've covered our tracks, then chalitza is done, and it will be effective mimonav shach. Either the co-wife was never pregnant, and this chalitza is the element that releases her, or it was the birth of the child that releases this woman from any yibum requirements, and that was accomplished by having waited the 9 months. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Chanina Omar li'atz moshlosha. For as far as the woman is concerned herself, she has to wait 3 months, as we already described, as any woman has to wait between relations with one man and a subsequent man. L'chaverta li'olam. As far as the co-wife is concerned, she has to wait an unlimited amount of time until she knows whether or not there was a child. The Gemara asks, "V'tachloitz mimonav shoch." Why doesn't she do chalitza according to Rabbi Chanina after 9 months? And either way, she will then be released, as we explained. Abaye bar Ovin, Rav Chanina bar Ovin, Amri Travayu. They both explain, "Gzera shemo yehe Vlad ben Kayoma." We have to take into consideration that co-wife may in fact have given birth, and the exemption from Yibum is the child, not the chalitza. And the chalitza that we would do, if we were, yes, to do chalitza, the chalitza would be meaningless. However, the public doesn't necessarily know that. V'nimtza ato matzricha kruz means an announcement, l'kahuna. If this woman would choose to marry a kohen. Now, a kohen in general is forbidden to marry a woman that was participant in an actual effective chalitza. In our case, if it's discovered that the co-wife bore a child, the chalitza that we would have done would have been basically a meaningless and ineffective chalitza. The birth of the child is responsible for the freedom exemption from Yibum, not the chalitza. And we would have to announce to make it clear that this woman is not really a chalitza. And as a result, her marriage to a kohen is acceptable. The Gemara asks, if that's your whole concern, let's do the chalitza after 9 months and have the velitzricha, and let's make the announcement. And then her marriage to a kohen will not be questioned because people will have heard the announcement and they'll be made aware that she is muteris to a kohen. The Gemara says, no, we can't rely on the announcement. Dilma iko dahavi b'chalitza, v'lo havi b'achroza. There might be people that were present at the chalitza or aware of the chalitza and not aware of the announcement. They'll see her marrying a kohen, v'amri, and they will conclude, koshoru chalutza l'kohen. And they will conclude that a chalutza is a type of woman that is allowed to marry a kohen. So, because of this fear, this consideration of Dilma Iko the Habul Chalitza v'Habul Achrosa, we don't do Chalitza after the 9 months. The Gemara continues. Note, there's a long question. Tanan, a quote from the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Ches Amid Beis. We're dealing with a woman that we knew to be zakuka to a yavam. She had a status of being a candidate for yibum. And the woman tells us, Nitan li ben b'medina sayam. I had a child while abroad, v'omra, and she continues to tell us, meis b'ni v'achakach ba'li. The child died. And the child's death was followed by the father's death, by her husband's death. And as a result, her husband died, leaving no children, and I am bound to the Yavam. Ne'emen, as she is believed, as we explained in our previous Shiurim, she is simply maintaining the original known status that she had. However, if the story is as follows, she tells us that she had a child, Meis Ba'ali, V'achar Kach Bini, first the father died, and then the son died. Eino ne'emenes. By telling us this order of events, she's basically telling us my husband died leaving a child upon his death. True, the child died later on, but a woman like that is not bound to the yavam. And she is attempting through her words to enable herself to marry Lashuk. So we have a woman that had a status of being bound to the yavam, and through her testimony, she's changing her status. She's not believed. We do take into consideration what she said, even though we're not believing her. We are requiring chalitza. In other words, we're not allowing her to marry straight out in some outsider. That's a function of our not believing her. However, she doesn't do yibum. Well, according to her words, she wouldn't be doing yibum. So that's the manifestation of choshishin l'dvorah, that we do take into consideration what she said, and we do not allow her to do yibum in accordance with her words. Now, in this story, we dashed underline choletzes. Chalitza is done. The Gemara asks, v'lechosh dilma osu edim. Maybe it would be better for her not to do chalitza, because Edim might come. V'amri ki de ki omra, and they will verify her words that the child died second, and she wasn't zakuka at all, and she wasn't bound at all, because her husband in effect left this world while the child was still alive, and the chalitza that was done according to the source was an unnecessary chalitza, and she benimtsa ato matzricha krusel kuna, and if she does the chalitza, we're in effect we're now requiring this announcement of regarding the kahuna, that her marriage to a kohen is acceptable. She's not a chalutza. Now, so what do we see from here? We are telling her to do chalitza, and we're going to be making this announcement. So this is not like Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Hanina, because of situation and his reluctance to rely on announcements, so he said no chalitza. And here we are saying yes chalitza, and in all likelihood yes announcement. Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa says that this source is dealing with a woman that is begrusha. She is a divorcee, and as such, she isn't going to be marrying a kohen to begin with, since in her past she was a divorcee. A grusha is forbidden to the kuna anyway. So we're not putting ourselves in the position where an announcement would be required. Rav Chia Braid Rav Huna Omar, the Omra, the woman in telling us the story, is saying, Ani vehu nichbeinu b'ma'ora. I and he were hidden in a cave. And as such, there is no chashash that witnesses will come and tell us and verify her story, thereby allowing her to marry a kohen. Therefore, we say, she does. Therefore, the source, because it was a case like that, where there aren't going to be any witnesses showing up, as per her story, that she was in a cave, and it was dark, and no one could have seen them anyway, so she's going to be this source has the luxury, therefore, of saying, yes, do chalitza, and not worrying about witnesses coming to verify her story, which would have then showed that the chalitza was unnecessary. But in a case where there is, would have been a fear of witnesses coming, so then in fact Rabbi Hanina would tell you that we would not go ahead with the chalitza, because doing the chalitza would have required the announcement, as we explained earlier. The Mishnah. Shtei Yevomas. These are two women, each one married to each one is married, and the two men are brothers. So you have two women that are married to two brothers. Zu omeres meis ba'ali, v'zu omeres meis ba'ali. Each one is saying, my husband died. Zu asura mitnei baila shel zu, v'zu asura mitnei baila shel zu. We must recount a halacha that we've learned in a previous Mishnah. The Mishnah had mentioned five women that cannot testify about the death of a husband, and that one of those is a Yavoma. Yavoma is the wife of one's husband's brother. So information that she says cannot be accepted for the one cannot accept the information that might have been helpful for you when it's information from your husband's brother's wife. So that the woman, true, she's believed to say on herself, my husband is dead, but in order to free the woman from Yibum, we have to know that her husband's brother is dead. And that information that her husband's brother is dead is being revealed by a woman upon whom she cannot rely. And therefore, as far as she is concerned, her husband's brother is not dead. So therefore, she cannot marry Lashuk. The Mishnah continues, Lazu Adim v'Lazu Ein Adim. One woman has witnesses that her husband is dead. The other woman does not have witnesses that her husband is dead. Again, we're continuing with the opening case of these are two women married to two brothers. So, Es Shiesh Lo Adim. The woman that has witnesses concerning her own husband's death, Asura, she cannot marry Lashuk because she doesn't know about her husband's brother being dead, other than through the testimony of a woman that she can't rely on. V'es she'ein lo edim, the woman that does not have witnesses regarding her own husband's death, all that there is herself. All she is saying that her husband is dead, but without the support of witnesses. So as far as herself being considered a woman without a husband, she is believed. A woman is believed to say, my husband is dead. And as far as her husband's brother, well, regarding that, there are two witnesses testifying about his death. Therefore, this particular woman, the woman that we're describing as Shein Lo Adim, she can marry Lashuk. She can marry out. Lazu Bonim v'Lazu Ein Bonim. One woman has children, the other one does not. Es Shiesh Lo Bonim Muteris, the woman that has children. So obviously you have a case of a woman whose husband died without children. A case of a woman whose husband died leaving children. So she's now simply a widow after saying, my husband died. She can marry Lashuk. The Es She'ein Lo Bonim, the woman who doesn't have children, so this is a case of a woman who testified that her husband is dead, leaving no children. Asura, she cannot marry Lashuk. She is a Yevoma. The Mishnah continues with a reference to the beginning of the Mishnah. Nisyabmu Umesu Hayivmin. The women at the beginning of the Mishnah, there were two women that were married to two brothers. Other brothers of their husbands that were still around. And these two women, after they had testified that their husbands died, so they went ahead and did Yibum. And then those Yivmin died. Asuros Linose. They cannot marry Lashuk, because each woman would have then experienced her own husband dying, leaving no children. They married surviving brothers of their... They're married surviving brothers. They died, leaving no children. But there are still the issue of their original husband's death, which would have been if we could know that for sure, so they would be free to marry. But the knowledge of each other's husband's death was coming from a woman upon whom each one could not rely. So therefore, the Tanakhama says they cannot marry Lashuk. Rebbe Lozer Oimer, Hayil v'Hutru Liyivmin, the original testimony, my husband is dead. What was the result of that in this case? The result of that was enabling each woman to marry her brother-in-law, those two other brothers that had survived. They married them. Now, one should note that if it wasn't... if we weren't relying on their word, that would be an Isor Kores. That's called Eshes Ach. And yet on their word, they went ahead and married those two other brothers. So if we're allowing them to do that, to marry their Yivmin, Hutru L'chol Adam, we can rely on the same information to establish that they, that each one's husband is no longer alive. Tanup. We should point out, by the way, that a woman who then marries out Lashuk, in the worst case scenario, that offense would be an Isor Lav, as we have mentioned previously. The Gemara. We're opening up with a Tanaic source that deals with a case that's not mentioned in the Mishnah. Lezu Tana, Lezu Edim Ubonim, Velezu Lo Edim Velo Bonim. One woman, when she tells us her husband died, she has witnesses as well, and she also has children. The other woman, she tells us her husband died, there are no witnesses, and there are no children. Shtehen Mutoros. Both women can marry Lashuk. So the woman that tells us that her husband died, and she has witnesses, and she also has children. So as far as herself, as far as she is concerned, so that she has children, she is not bound to the Yavam. So she's not bound. She can marry Lashuk. The other woman that doesn't have witnesses regarding her own husband's death, but regarding the Yavam's death, there are witnesses. So that enables her as well to be Muteres Lashuk. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a quote from the Mishnah. Note the arrow helps you to align where this is coming from. Nisyavmu Umesu Hayivmin. The two women, after they told us that their own husbands died, they went ahead and married two other brothers. Each one married a separate brother to do Yibum. And then those new husbands, or their husbands' brothers, they died. Asurin Linose, they cannot marry Lashuk. Because at this point, each one would be dependent on the other one's testimony, and Yevamos are not believed to testify one for the other. Reb Elazar Omer Hoyel V'Hutru L'Yivmin, Hutru L'Chol Adam. Since we did rely on them to go ahead and marry the two other brothers, we can now rely on their original testimony to marry Lashuk. Boi Rava. There's a question the Gemara raises now. It's a we have this marked as a long question. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading introducing this piece of Gemara. Birur Tam Shitas Reb Elazar. We want to analyze, investigate the logic, the reasoning behind Reb Elazar. Shamar Shnei Yevamos Nisyavu Al Smach Amiros and Meis Bali. These two women that went ahead and married their husband's brothers based on their testimony that my husband died, and then those two new husbands, the two Yivmin, died. Mutoros Lashuk. This is what Rebbe Elazar has said. They can then marry outside. We're not taking into consideration anymore that the two original husbands are alive. The Gemara. Boy Rava, my time of the Rebbe Elazar. What is the basis of Rebbe Elazar that's matir these women Lashuk? So it's the Aleph Oy Dilma Beis structure. Aleph, do we say Mishum de Kosovar tzora me'ida lechaverta? Is it because Rebbe Lazar has his own opinions of Tanaic authority, so he disagrees with that which we've seen in a previous mission, and he holds that a tzora, a co-wife, here you have a form of co-wife, they're both yevomos, they're two women that are married to two brothers. So he is of the opinion that a tzora is believed to testify concerning the other one. Oy dilma, mishum dihi loy mekalkala nafsha. Or is it by virtue of the fact that you have a woman who went ahead and did something that would have resulted in a major disaster for her if it wasn't true? She went ahead and married her husband's brother. If her husband would show up, then the woman would be usher to both people. The children from the second marriage would be mamzerim. Big mess up for her. And yet, she went ahead and did that. She went ahead and married him, knowing all of those risks. So, is it because of that she has this enhanced believability? And not a function of a general approach of Rebbe Lazar that we believe these kinds of women, one regarding the other. Lamai nafgamina, what difference does it make in terms of this analysis? What practical difference is there? Le'insubi litzora bi'alma, the word ba'alma, we're adding courtesy of Rashi. Le'insubi litzora ba'alma mekami dida. We look at Rashi at the top. Le'insubi litzora ba'alma mekami dida. Ho'isha sholcha l'mdia sayam im baila. The woman who went abroad with her husband, Ubov Yomra, and she came back and told us, Meis Ba'ali, my husband died. Voisola kan tzora. This tzora, not to be confused with the use of the word tzora at the bottom of our previous omit. Here, it's a reference to a standard form of co-wife. She had a co-wife that did not go abroad. Imzu tinose be'edusa shelzu kodem shetinose hi. Can she, the co-wife who remained behind, can she marry based on this woman's testimony, the co-wife that did go abroad with the husband? So will we allow the co-wife that remained behind to marry before the traveling co-wife? If you say that Rebbe Lazar has a general approach that co-wives are believed regarding the other one, so afal gav de lo insiv, even though the traveling wife did not get married yet, matzavina lo letzor, we will allow the tzora to get married based on the simple testimony that our husband died. If you say that the woman's believability is because she put herself into a danger's way by marrying a surviving brother of her husband, well, then the our attitude toward the non-traveling co-wife is as follows. Intiv mansavina la letzora. If the traveling woman would marry the brother-in-law, then we'll allow the co-wife to marry out. Lo insiv. If, however, the traveling wife doesn't put herself in danger's way by having married a brother, husband's brother, then lo mansavina lo. We wouldn't allow the tzora to get married. Because fundamentally, Rebbe Lazar agrees that a tzora cannot be made al chaverta. My. So what is the final approach with regard to Rebbe Lazar? On the side, we have a nosei mivne heading so that you can see a house shape appears. This is a nisoyon lifshot, an attempt to resolve the Rebbe Lazar matir mitam dihi lo mekalkula nafsho, that her believability is based on her own action of marrying the yavam. and the inverted house that will appear later, Nisayon lahasbir shitas Rabbi Elazar mitam acher, an attempt to explain Rabbi Elazar through a different means. So the question is raised, what is the basis of Rabbi Elazar's opinion? Toshma, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Hoyul v'hutru li'yivmin, hutru l'chol adam. It's mashma that the heter that she has to marry out is based on the fact that she herself had done yibum, and she wouldn't have messed herself up unless she was actually telling the truth. If you say that that's the analysis, because she wouldn't mess herself up, hainu dechi insiv mansavina la. Therefore, through that we understand what it says in the source that, and therefore we would say that when she herself gets married, we would allow the tzora to get married. Elo iamris mishum the tzora miida lechaverta. If, however, you say that a co-wife is able to testify about her partner, af algav dolo in sivnami, even if she wouldn't have married the yavam, they should be allowed. So that in the source from the Mishnah where Rebbe Elazar appears, it wouldn't have had to say since they married the yivmin. Even without that, the mere fact that they testify that their husbands died would have been enough. Ela shma mino, we see therefore from here, taimo de Rebbe Elazar, mishum de insiv hu, the lo mekalkula nafsha. Rebbe Elazar in the Mishnah is then clear as holding that only because they married the yavam and put themselves in danger's way that we allow them subsequently, with the death of the Yivman, to marry out. And so with that information, then we would be able to apply that to the Nafkamina case regarding a standard co-wife that we saw above. Namely, that the standard co-wife, the woman who didn't travel, would not be allowed to marry unless the traveling co-wife would have married a surviving brother. At this point, the Gemara rejects the analysis. Rebbe Elazar l'divrayim karmelahu. Rebbe Elazar that we just saw in the Tanaic source that we quoted, the Mishnah that we quoted, Rebbe Elazar is not reflecting his own opinion. L'didi, as far as I am concerned, tzora me'ido l'chaverta, a co-wife or a partner in marriage can testify about the other one. The afalgav de lo insiv mansavina law, and even if the woman herself had not married a yavam, we would allow her to marry. We would allow the other one to marry lashuk based on the testimony. In other words, a tzora can testify about her partner. Elali didchu, but according to you who argue with me, who hold that a tzora cannot meyid lechaverta, odulu mihas, you should at least concede to me, tehecho de insiv, where the woman did marry her brother-in-law, mansavinon law, mishum dehi lo mekalkalo nafsha, that with that action having taken place, then that would be very convincing that the original husband is dead, and that the other woman could marry out. Verabonan, why do they not accept that as well? Why are they not impressed with the fact that a woman who testified, my husband is dead, she went ahead and married her brother-in-law, and that still doesn't convince us that she is telling the truth? For Rabbanan, the reason is Tomus Nafshi Implishtim Hu Deka'ovda. She was willing to even ruin herself as long as she could cause ruination to the other woman. This is a pasuk when featuring the Shofet Shimshon Samson, the mighty, some might know him as, who at the end of his life was willing to die just as long as several thousand plishtim would die along with him. So a person is, in this, as the Rabbanan look at these two women, a woman would be willing to, after saying, "My husband died," go ahead and marry the brother-in-law, just to make it appear very convincing that her husband is dead, so that the other woman would think she can go ahead and marry Lashuk, that she's free to marry out, when in fact she was not allowed. Toshma, as we indicated earlier, you see the inverted house. This shows us that we're going to be analyzing Rebbe Lozer, but from a different track of thought. Ha'isha shahocha hi ubaylo m'dias hayam. Ubov yomra meis bali. Woman who went abroad with her husband comes back and tells us, "My husband is dead." Tino se v'tito subasa. She can marry also receive her ksuba payment that's due to her through her husband's death. V'tzorosa asura. Her co-wife cannot marry out. Because as far as the Tanakhama is concerned, the information that the husband is dead comes through a co-wife, and that's unreliable. Rebbe Lozer Oimer, Hoyel v'hutra hi, hutra nami tzorosa. Since she is allowed to marry out with her own testimony that the husband died, the co-wife is also allowed to marry out. So what do we see here? We see from the point that she herself is the testifying woman is allowed, that's enough, and we don't wait for her to marry a surviving brother. Of course, in this case, there is no surviving brother, but we see that the heter is based on the point at which she testifies that her husband died. That at that point, the co-wife becomes muteris also. The Gemara rejects this conclusion. Ema hoyel v'hutra v'nises. The believability of the woman is because she went ahead and married out. She said her husband died, and she went ahead and married out. That is what enables the tzora to marry. Of course, according to Rebbe Lozer. So that it's not the mere word, but it's the fact that she put herself in danger's way by marrying another man. Just imagine the original husband would come back, how much she would lose. So the fact that she went ahead and did marry another man, that's what gives her credibility with regard to the co-wife. The Gemara asks if the heter is because she went ahead and actually married, and that gave her believability that otherwise a woman wouldn't mess herself up. Maybe this woman who is marrying another man is actually a woman that had received a document of divorce. She was actually a divorcee. She was divorced by that husband who had gone abroad. Remember, you have a woman who went along with her husband abroad. Maybe he divorced her while abroad. And she had personal comfort in marrying some other man. Why not? She's a divorcee. She can marry another man. And that which she said, "My husband died." Her intention was to mess things up for the tzora, namely by hearing that their husband died, the tzora would then go and marry someone else, and the husband never died at all. And the fact that the first woman married someone else, that's because she had been divorced. But the tzara wasn't divorced, and this would result in the tzara's being messed up. So just because she had married out, the first woman had married out, that doesn't give her believability. She's not putting herself into danger's way. The Gemara says, "E de'insiv li Yisrael hachi nami." If in fact the woman who said meis bali went ahead and married a Yisrael non-Kohen, a non-Kohen, only Kohanim have a restriction in marrying divorcees. If she went ahead and married a Yisrael, so then I would in fact entertain the suspicion that you just raised, and that her marrying someone else is not a sign of her self-assuredness that she's telling the truth. Hocha b'mayaskinon, this source that upon which we said that her believability is because she went and married someone else, the insiv l'kayin, she married in fact a Kohen. Now, if she had been a divorcee, she wouldn't go ahead and marry a Kohen. The fact that she's married Kohen, it's based on her assuredness, the truth of her words that her husband is actually dead. And the fact is she went ahead and married another man. That other man happens to be a Kohen, so it's clear she's not a divorcee. And the fact that she's marrying another man, that's what gives her trustworthiness, believability in that the husband is dead. And it's concerning that case that Reb Elazar says the co-wife can also remarry, but not because a co-wife, a tzara, is believed to testify or provide information for the other one, for her partner. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.